major area of concern is, of course, Funny River. They're still working on Kisilov, but the wind is blowing away from Kisilov. That's blowing the fire back on itself.
Residents evacuate as the Kenai Peninsula fire devours 158,000 acres. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Monday, Memorial Day, May 26th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, a request for the federal government to allow more time to examine impacts of oil development in the Chukchi Sea.
If anything, they should give the court a longer time frame and then back off should they finish it sooner.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Join the majority of Alaskans who understand that exposure to secondhand tobacco smoke endangers their health. The toxins in secondhand smoke go everywhere the blood flows, to all organs of the body, creating cellular changes that lead to cancer, heart attack and stroke, miscarriage, and other diseases. For more information on how to eliminate exposure to secondhand smoke, visit alaskatca.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance.
The Funny River fire continues to burn the central Kenai Peninsula this week. As of this afternoon, it's estimated to have burned more than 158,000 acres with 30% containment. Yesterday, Funny River Road from Mile 7 to the end was evacuated. The Kenai Keys were put on evacuation alert. KBBI's Shady Grove Oliver reports.
The fire is mainly burning within the Kenai National Wildlife Refuge, though it has pushed outside those boundaries over the last few days. Sarah McAlpin says she lives on the Funny River side of the Kenai Keys. She and her husband and their dog left home with only some medications, documents, and a few valuables.
We were on alert we were packed and ready to go. We actually heard the fire from our property, and the choppers were actually coming in front of our house on the river, filling up their buckets and dumping it on the fire on that side.
She and other evacuees attended one of the many public information sessions at Redoubt Elementary School in Soldotna. It's serving as a Red Cross shelter for people displaced by the fire. Chris Erickson is a public information officer with the Alaska Incident Management Team. She's helping get the word out to residents about the most recent fire updates. She says there have been no injuries, and at this point, there are no structures known to be destroyed.
We don't know if structures are lost. I know that no structures were lost in the Kenai Keys. We had a few spots over there, which CES and Forestry went over quickly and got on the roof of a trailer and a deck or two had caught some embers, and they put those out. They wrapped that up and left yesterday. Everything was fine in the Kenai Keys. I know we haven't lost them there. We know the fire went to the southeast of Salmon Run subdivision and spotted across the river, but did not damage any houses in Salmon Run, and the spots were all caught on the other side of the river. So that's good.
She also says there is no known structural damage in the Funny River area. However, Erickson says it's hard to determine if there has or has not been damage to more rural cabins without being able to actually get on the ground and check. And Erickson says crews are now focusing their efforts on the northern edge of the fire.
The major area of concern is, of course, Funny River. They're still working on Kisilov, but the wind is blowing away from Kisilov. That's blowing the fire back on itself. So it isn't spreading much in that area. It's still burning. If it gets hot and the wind blows, you'll still see a plume, but most of it is leaning north, not leaning south toward Kisilov.
Michelle Weston is an information officer for the fire management team. She says the wind has been a major factor in the fire so far.
So looking forward to today, we do have the same, just like yesterday, we do have the same wind pattern looking that it's going to kick up. It's not going to be as strong winds. It might be gusts to 18, I believe, coming from the southwest, which means it's going to be pushing it to the northeast.
She says it's pushed the fire deeper into the wildlife refuge.
We are concerned that we've had overnight a significant push of the fire in an eastern direction along the lower area about 3 or 4 miles below south of Skelak Lake. We've advised homeowners along Skelak Lake, the private inholdings, that they should precautionarily think about evacuating and getting defensible space done. And that's primarily one private inholding and one lodge.
Weston says there are about 600 people involved in the firefighting effort. That includes Army National Guard Black Hawk helicopters, water scoopers from Canada, management officials from the Yukon, and teams from the lower 48. Borough Mayor Mike Navarre says it's been a community, statewide, and regional effort. And he says he hopes the weather will help over the next few days.
Hopefully, we're going to see some rain tonight, tomorrow, and maybe for a few days to help suppress the fire, and that will be a welcome if we can see that.
But for now, residents like Sarah McAlbin will wait, watch, and hope for some news that the fire is moving away from their homes.
It's scary. It's, you know, like I said, we heard the fire. It's a sound I won't ever forget. But, you know, if God sees fit to take what we have, then it's a new chapter of our life. And we can just pray. Well, it's kind of the way we feel, you know.
The Red Cross shelter in Soldotna has open cot space and is providing some meals and snacks for people displaced by the fire. Reporting from Soldotna, I'm Shady Grove Oliver.
Smoke from the Kenai Peninsula wildfire has been drifting into Anchorage and Eagle River this weekend. The Anchorage Municipal Air Quality Hotline reported this afternoon that conditions in Anchorage are considered moderate today, but for Eagle River residents, the index is 110, which means the air quality is unhealthy for sensitive groups. Providence Hospital pulmonologist Dr. Mark Martinovich says people with sensitive respiratory systems should be cautious about spending time outdoors.
Those patients who have underlying asthma in terms of children or among adults, asthma or COPD, emphysema, also those who have significant allergic problems, such as allergic rhinitis, for example, these would be the type of persons that would be at higher risk for some complications related to smoke exposure.
Dr. Martinovich says limiting exertion in smoking conditions is best for those with respiratory problems. He says simple particle masks, such as those used for wood sanding, will not help guard against smoke.
This would be more specialized masks, such as those used, for example, in preventing TB exposure or some particulate exposure to viruses, for example. These would be the kinds of masks that could potentially help patients like that.
Air quality ratings between 101 and 150 are unhealthy for vulnerable people. The Tyonek fire, which started a week ago today, is currently burning at about 1,900 acres. The blaze is between the villages of Tyonek and Beluga. State Fire Information Officer Sam Harrell says the fire is considered to be 70% contained, with full containment expected by Wednesday. A community meeting will be held in Beluga this evening at 7:30. Rain in the forecast should help. However, current conditions are very dry and windy. 260 firefighting personnel are still working the Tyonek fire today. China has lifted a five-month-long ban on live shellfish from U.S. West Coast waters. U.S. Representative Derek Kilmer's office sent out a statement on Friday saying the ban had been lifted. The ban had particularly affected the Washington and Alaska shellfish industry. China imposed a ban in December on the import of clams, oysters, mussels, and scallops harvested from Washington, Oregon, Alaska, and Northern California. China detected high levels of inorganic arsenic in geoducks from Puget Sound. It also found paralytic shellfish poisoning in geoducks harvested in Alaska. Despite the ban, Washington growers had been shipping shellfish to Asia, with the two main destinations being Hong Kong and Vietnam. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, voices of Alaska military members for Memorial Day.
She said that you were going to go into the Army and that you were going to be gone and she was going to miss you.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by BP Alaska, committed to the state of Alaska through investment, production, and jobs for future generations of Alaskans. More at alaska.bp.com. And by First National Bank Alaska, earning Alaska's trust for more than 90 years. Learn more at fnbalaska.com. Equal housing lender, member FDIC.
On Friday, the federal government released a status update on the court-ordered revision of an environmental impact statement for Lease Sale 193 in the Chukchi Sea. The Ninth Circuit found in an April ruling that the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management, or BOEM, had underestimated how much oil may be recoverable in Arctic Ocean development. The Wilderness Society's Arctic Program Director, Lois Epstein, says it appears BOEM is approaching the work of revising the development scenarios for the EIS in a thorough manner, but she says BOEM should not set a limit, such as the 10-month time frame that was proposed to the court.
As an engineer, I know these analyses take quite a bit of time. The modeling takes a long time to get it right, and we think they should just take the time that's needed. If anything, they should give the court a longer time frame and then back off should they finish it sooner.
Epstein noted BOEM officials had indicated overtime may be needed to get the report finished within the 10 months. BOEM will issue the next status report on July 22nd. 2015 will likely bring new fisheries to the Western Aleutian Islands now that the National Marine Fisheries Service has issued its final report on the way commercial fishing affects an endangered population of Steller sea lions. The agency came out in favor of allowing more fishing in its Environmental Impact Statement, or EIS, on Friday morning. This is a major move for NIMFS. As recently as 2010, the agency was trying to close fishing grounds in the Bering Sea and Aleutians. Biologists didn't want the Steller sea lions to have to compete with fishermen for pollock, Atka mackerel, and Pacific cod. But the fishing industry argued there wasn't enough scientific proof that commercial harvests were putting pressure on the endangered species. The issue went to court, and a federal judge ordered NIMFS to go back to the drawing board. The agency was required to come up with the new environmental impact statement, which looks at the scientific and economic implications of different protection plans. Last year, the North Pacific Fishery Management Council told biologists they preferred an option that would relax some bans on commercial fishing. NIMFS has been studying that plan ever since. The agency ruled more fishing at certain times of the year in certain areas is not likely to jeopardize sea lions. Now NIMFS will start turning that into a federal regulation. It could go into effect as early as January 2015. The leading global seafood sustainability label currently certifies much of Alaska's salmon harvest as sustainable, but only a few companies can use the label. KDLG's Mike Mason has the story.
The Marine Stewardship Council's latest certification of Alaska's salmon fisheries as sustainable was made back in November, and it's in effect until November of 2018. However, the client for the certification has changed. The Persane Vessel Owners Association has given way to the Alaska Salmon Processors Association. The new association's president is a Seattle lawyer who also serves as a director for Silver Bay Seafoods. Silver Bay Seafoods is just one of six companies allowed to use the highly regarded MSC sustainability label. Other client group members include Ecoc Fisheries, Copper River Seafoods, 10th and M Seafoods, EC Phillips & Son, and International Seafoods of Alaska. Three of those companies have a presence in Bristol Bay's massive sockeye salmon fishery. There are only six companies in the new client group for the MSC certification because most of the major seafood processors in Alaska rejected the MSC label in favor of the RFM sustainability label spearheaded by the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute. The fact that much of the commercial salmon harvest in Bristol Bay and in the whole state of Alaska won't carry the MSC label is troubling to prominent commercial fisherman Robin Samuelson from Dillingham. He's the president of the board of directors for the Bristol Bay Economic Development Corporation and also serves on the board of the Bristol Bay Native Corporation. Samuelson also sits on the board of Ocean Beauty Seafoods, which was one of the companies that rejected the MSC label. Samuelson spoke to the issue during the recent Business of Fish workshop in Dillingham.
I've been a supporter of MSC. I was the sole representative that testified to the MSC board to give us MSC certification. And I guess there was some problems in how MSC was charging the processors and their demands within MSC, and the processors decided to pull out. I was unhappy about that, but it sounds like they're rectifying the situation with this other organization, and hopefully it's going to work out for us.
Silver Bay Seafoods, which many observers believe has spearheaded the retention of the MSC label for much of Alaska's commercially caught salmon, is set to make a big splash in Bristol Bay's sockeye salmon fishery this summer as they bring their massive new processing plant online. It's located along the Naknek River. Samuelson says that as a fisherman, he's thankful there are new processors willing to come into the bay.
We've got too few companies. I mean, you go back to the 80s, and we had cash buyers sitting down at Clark's. We had cash buyers in Naknek, Quijack, Ugashik, Togiak, and they all disappeared. And it's kind of like the herring fishery, you know. We all know that the processors run the herring fishery. They tell you what you're going to get, how much you're going to get, when you're going to get them. We don't want that to happen. And I welcome both processors, and I hope they're very successful. The Silver Bay plant is the biggest producing plant in Bristol Bay. Nothing compares to it as far as producing fish. And, you know, I hope next year, year after, we get a couple more folks come into the bay, and I hope we get cash buyers back.
As it stands now, only the Bristol Bay sockeye processed by Silver Bay Seafoods, Copper River Seafoods, and Ekuk Fisheries will be eligible to carry the MSC label, which is especially valuable in many European markets. Mike DeCesare is the communications director for the Marine Stewardship Council. He notes that Alaska's salmon fishery was the first salmon fishery ever certified as sustainable by MSC in 2001.
When I mentioned that multi-year process of developing the MSC standard, once it was developed, you needed to test it somewhere, to ground truth it, frankly. Alaska salmon was approached. It was taken to a point of testing that the science behind it was sound, and then it stopped. The research was turned over to the Alaska fishery, saying we've gone as far as we need to go. If you want to become the first fishery to become certified, then take it from there. And then that happened, and then on from there.
DeCesare's comments about the program were made during the recent Economic Summit of the Southwest Alaska Municipal Conference, which was held in early March in Anchorage. The current MSC certification covers all of Alaska's commercial salmon fisheries, except for the fisheries in Prince William Sound. They stay in the assessment mode until more research is conducted about things like interactions with hatchery-raised fish. Leaving the Prince William Sound fisheries out of the reassessment is believed to have been one of the reasons why the Purse Seine Vessel Owners Association relinquished being the client for the MSC label and instead turned it over to the new Alaska Salmon Processors Association. In Dillingham, I'm Mike Mason.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Northern Air Cargo, providing freight transportation to 13 rural Alaska communities. NAC offers a variety of service options to get the freight where it needs to be safely. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956. Finding the time for physical activity after school, homework, and dinner can be tough, but you can make it a priority to stay healthy as a family. Go for a bike ride, take a walk around the neighborhood, or play a game of basketball with your kids. Get active, get moving, and have fun as a family. Inspire your kids to get out and play 60 minutes every day. For more ways to get physically active, visit playeveryday.alaska.gov. This message is sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
Today is Memorial Day. As part of a project honoring military service, StoryCorps traveled to Alaska in February to record the voices of our servicemen and women. Tonight, we bring you some of their stories. At age 5, Justin Hayward Conaher knew he was going to be a paratrooper. At 38, he considers himself a survivor. As part of StoryCorps at J-Bear, Justin spoke with his friend John Pennell about one of his earliest jumps.
I almost broke my arm trying to jump off our garage roof with a blanket. It didn't work nearly as well as I had planned it.
Right.
But that's where that seed started for me.
So that was your first introduction to gravity.
It was, the hard way. You know, you think in your mind you know what some things are going to be like, and I have thought about what it would be like to jump out of an airplane almost my entire life up to that point. And it was not anything like I thought it would be. The first time wasn't so bad. The subsequent jumps were more terrifying because I knew what to expect. And anyone who's done it and tells you that they're not scared every single time they step out the door of that airplane is lying. But it was a rush like nothing I had ever felt before in my life. It was better than sex. Our company executive officer, when I was at Fort Bragg, he had a magic eight ball on his desk. And before every jump, the entire company would file past his desk and shake the magic eight ball. Am I going to burn in on this jump? And it would say yes every time. It was broken on yes. And no one never did. Every time we jumped, very superstitious, very regimented, we did it every time.
Did it ever say no?
It did say no. To me.
Okay.
Once.
Can you tell me about that jump?
This is a night jump. I got to the door. I jumped. Everything was good. I counted to 4,000. My chute opened. I checked everything over. Everything is good. I'm looking around. It was a nice moonlit night. I could see other jumpers. I'm enjoying the ride. And then I noticed I was falling faster than everybody else. That doesn't make sense because I'm a small guy. I weighed 130 pounds. Even with gear, I could be the first man out the door of a plane and I would be the last one to hit the ground. I looked up at my chute and it had partially collapsed into a half cigarette roll.
Mm-hmm.
This is very serious. I was losing altitude very quickly and the ground was coming up extremely fast. I have no recollection of actually hitting the ground, but I do remember a terrible crack. It was probably when my skull was fractured, when it hit the inside of my helmet as I hit the ground. From that, I have a traumatic brain injury. I was unconscious when I woke up. I couldn't see or move. I was partially paralyzed. The recovery process has been very difficult. When I got out of the Army, I was in a bad place. My whole identity up to that point in my life had been, I'm going to be a soldier or I am a soldier, and that's going to be my career until I retire. And that was taken away from me.
Justin Conaher's StoryCorps interview is archived at the Library of Congress. These days, Justin works as a photojournalist. In another StoryCorps interview, Lucia Artasho tells her husband, Army Sergeant Jason Smith, why she's decided to enlist in the Army. The couple is starting to notice how their three-year-old is adjusting to having parents who are both soldiers.
We were sitting, I think it was for dinner, and your daughter, who is 3 years old right now, told you that she was going to be a soldier.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts on that?
She was talking about it the whole way back from gymnastics, too. Yeah, you didn't hear that. She likes to repeat the stories, yeah? She said that you were going to go into the Army and that you were going to be gone and she was going to miss you, but then you were going to come back after a little while. And then after you were back, then she was going to go. And then she would come back and then her little brother would go, too. And we would all miss each other in this chain of missing each other and coming back.
Yes, so she was referring to the fact that now I am going into the military. I would be going to basic training within a month.
Yeah.
So to a new soldier like me, with all the experience that you had so far, what would you like to tell me?
That's a tough question, hon. I don't know that I would tell you the same thing that I would tell somebody who I wasn't married to. You know, like, I want to protect you more, and I feel like I would want to hold on to you tighter and say don't go, you know, because I wouldn't want to say goodbye to you, you know. But if that's what you want to do, then I support you, because I know it's going to make you happy, and I know that you've had to deal with those same sort of feelings with me, and I think it would kind of be unfair if I told you I didn't want you to go because I was going to worry too much about you, you know. I know that you worried about me, so.
I felt like in the short time that I have, I need to do something useful, and money is not the factor, perhaps, that it was when I was younger. And I start thinking about the military. I like it because it's a regimented lifestyle. It's very active, and those are all things that I like. It's something that I felt I really wanted to do, and you are an absolutely amazing father and can handle
your load and then more.
I know that the hardest thing during training is going to be not being with you guys.
Mm-hmm.
I know I'm going to miss you and our daughter and our son and Nana. And I'm going to be thinking, I'm going to be miserably like somewhere cold eating an MRE and thinking, oh, it's dinner time at home.
I don't think it'll be cold. I think it'll be totally the opposite of here. So
okay, then it would be one less problem.
Really warm.
No, I know I'm going to miss you guys. Mm-hmm. And I'll be looking forward to coming back home.
Yeah, us too.
I love you.
I love you too, hon.
Jason and Lucia's StoryCorps interview was recorded in February at Fort Wainwright. The full 40-minute interview is archived at the Library of Congress. Lucia is currently at basic training in Missouri. Jason says she's doing great. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Shady Grove Oliver in Soldotna, Lauren Rosenthal in Unalaska, and Mike Mason in Dillingham. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Pat Yak is our web producer. And I'm Laurie Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating jobs and business opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
Alaska Mental Health Trust beneficiaries are important members of our workforce, from healthcare facilities and nonprofit organizations to retail stores and restaurants. Alaskans who are in recovery or experience developmental disabilities, traumatic brain injuries, or mental health conditions are succeeding in the workplace. The Trust encourages businesses to consider ways in which employing trust beneficiaries can be good for business. Learn more at mhtrust.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Mental Health Trust. If you're ready to quit tobacco or just thinking about it, the coaches at Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line, a free service for all Alaska adults, can support you with Text to Quit, with tools to make your quit attempt successful. Text to Quit helps you stay in touch with your quit coach, use nicotine replacement medications properly, manage those urges to use tobacco, and prevent relapses, all from your mobile phone. Call 1-800-QUIT-NOW. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.